All right.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Thursday, everybody. Today is March 12th, 2026. And our top story this morning, once again, private credit. We've got another one. They are dropping like flies. Shout out to my friend Art Vandelay, who sent me this story late last night. Morgan Stanley has joined the ranks of the gated private credit funds, the funds that tell people, no, you can't have your money back when you ask. Last night, it was the Morgan Stanley North Haven Private Income Fund that gated redemptions. They have limits of 5%, as most of these funds do. They're limiting redemption requests at 5% of the total value of the fund after receiving requests for almost 11%. So less than half of the people who ask for it are going to get their money back in this Morgan Stanley Private Credit Fund. They're joining the ranks of Blue Owl, BlackRock, Blackstone, and yesterday Cliffwater, all of which have done the same thing. These are big funds, billions of dollars in assets under management. They're full of loans to companies that don't really cash flow, don't make a lot of money, or at the very least, we don't have a lot of visibility into them because they're privately held companies. These loans are not publicly traded, so there's no accurate marks on the price. It's just basically whatever the fund managers decide to make up at any given time, that's what it's worth. Meanwhile, they're bragging about their returns, half of which is PIC income, which is payment in kind, because the companies aren't actually paying back their debt with money. They're paying back their debt with more debt. In other words, these funds are full of crap. Everybody knows it. They want their money back. The fund managers don't have the money to give to them, so they're gating their redemptions. And again, this is a feature, not a bug, of private credit funds. These assets are notoriously illiquid, hard to sell, hard to price accurately. And so all these people who joined these funds, they signed up to have their withdrawals gated at any given time. They knew this was a possibility. They did it anyway. These things were just never suitable for retail investors to begin with. Now, you know, there was an interesting story my friend Pasta Man told me one time. He sent me this video about these historical banking crises. And when Over and Gurney failed in 1865, 1866 in the UK, and the Bank of England very famously told their managers at this company, you don't have a liquidity problem, you have a collateral problem. And a lot of people are saying there's a liquidity crisis going on in private credit. Yeah, the problem is they just don't have enough cash. The assets are illiquid. All right. Okay. So, yeah, it's true. They don't have enough cash. But maybe the reason why they don't have enough cash and maybe the reason why they can't get enough cash is because their collateral is garbage and they can't sell it to get the cash that they need. In other words, it's not a liquidity problem. It's not just a liquidity mismatch. It's a collateral problem. Nobody wants to be holding this stuff. The music is slowing, guys, in private credit, and it's slowing fast. But don't worry, it's not like the banks have exposure. Oh, that's right, they do. We've got an article from Deutsche Bank this morning. $30 billion in exposure to private credit funds over at Deutsche Bank. But don't worry, there's always something good in the last paragraph of a Bloomberg article. They're increasing their exposure to private credit after warning that they have $30 billion of exposure to it. These banks are so predictably awful, aren't they? And meanwhile, Japanese insurance funds are saying, hold my sake. They're also increasing their exposure to private credit. Japanese insurance funds that are already loaded up with worthless Japanese government bonds or American CLOs that are full of commercial real estate debt. Well, it must be nice to have the implicit guarantee of a central bank bailout. I guess then you don't really care what you're buying with other people's money, do you? Now, the other story going on this morning is, of course, oil. We've got a lot of stories of oil and the ongoing war in the Middle East. We're sitting at about $93 a barrel in oil right now, up from the high 80s yesterday. We are now positive for the week, albeit just by a few dollars, still way off the ridiculous highs that we saw Monday morning. But we got the article late last night. The United States is going to release 172 million barrels of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. America is dipping into their oil piggy bank for the second time in 4 years now. Now, this 172 million barrels is part of a wider release of 400 million barrels globally that are being released in order to cushion the impact of oil prices. So while the United States release is marginally smaller than the last time we dumped oil from the middle, from the SPR. I mean, it was 180 million barrels that Biden dumped. Trump is dumping 172. Aha, it's less. But this is a bigger global dump because back in 2022, the rest of the world didn't participate. Now we've got almost 400 million combined here. So this will be a bigger release of oil reserves, but this is arguably a much bigger problem than we had in 2022. Because remember, when we dumped all the oil in 2022, everybody was saying we weren't going to buy Russian oil. We kicked them out of SWIFT, but that Russian oil still made it to market. The Indians were happy to buy that oil. So it's not like you really had this major global disruption. We just rearranged who we were selling what to and who was buying what from whom. This is different this time. That oil in the Middle East is not getting out. At least most of it isn't. Some is going to go west through that Saudi pipeline. Some is going Leroy Jenkins through the Strait. They're taking their chance with the missiles and with the mines. But for the most part, that oil's not getting out. So it's a bigger dump into a bigger problem. Where does price go from here? I don't know. I really don't know. There's just still too many questions here. The Strategic Petroleum Reserve is down to 415 million barrels. We're dumping almost half of that now. Now, we've also had three more tankers were hit overnight in the Strait of Hormuz. We've got China is further tightening their fuel export controls. We've got price controls or price caps. It's price controls being put on fuel in South Korea now. Yesterday, it was India was doing profit caps. Again, see also price controls. So South Korea is the second country to put retail price controls in place to stop the rising cost of fuel here. And we've also got some AI bubble stories this morning. First of all, Oracle earnings. I am remiss. I have to say I was distracted by other things yesterday, and I completely missed Oracle earnings that came out late Tuesday. So let's talk about Oracle earnings for a minute. We're playing catch up here. The stock ripped about 9% yesterday. Why did the stock rip 9%? They beat on revenue, largely expected. And of course, their remaining performance obligations drew by $20 billion. The market sees through that BS now, though. Nobody cares about remaining performance obligations anymore. Why did Oracle rip yesterday? My take, I think the reason Oracle ripped yesterday, besides the fact that they're down more than 50% since September, and so you had a lot of awful news priced in. And so when you get just okay news, of course, the stock is going to rip in a relief rally. But I think the reason why that thing really jumped is because they did not increase their CapEx. Oracle announced that their CapEx is going to stay flat for the year. Remember, they pulled out of that big OpenAI data center over funding rounds. Oracle said, we're not going to take out any more debt this year. And the market rewarded them for that. That's important. All the other big tech, all the other hyperscalers, the Mag 7, they are borrowing money, exhausting their free cash flow in order to spend even more on CapEx, and their stocks are going down. Oracle says we've done enough. Their stock goes up. I'm beginning to see a pattern here. The market does not want data center buildouts anymore, which, of course, is not good news for NVIDIA. So what does NVIDIA do yesterday? Why not give your customers another $2 billion so they can spend the money on your product? And that's exactly what NVIDIA did. They announced a $2 billion investment in Nebius, the other NeoCloud, the margarine of CoreWeaves, if you will, Nebius. Yeah, NVIDIA is buying $2 billion of their stock. Why? So Nebius can buy $2 billion of their chips. NVIDIA is buying their own chips using Nebius as a middleman. Gee, round tripping. Has anybody said anything? Has anybody been warning about this since 2023? I don't. Do we need to do this? Do we need to put this thing on? Yeah. How about this? All right, we're going to get a little crazy here. Just maybe the demand for compute is insane in the same way that Crazy Eddie's prices were insane. And of course, with Crazy Eddie in the Panama pump, he had to strap cash to his family members. You know, he would like tape it to them and they'd get on a plane. They'd fly to Israel, deposit in the bank, transfer that stuff to Panama. And then from there, send fake purchase orders to Crazy Eddie's to inflate their revenue before the stock IPO'd. Who needs to do that when you've got NeoClouds? Am I right? You can just make a strategic investment in your own customers and then they can hand the money right back to you. Save your family members the trip around the world. But, you know, that's just me. I'm just a Twitter rando, and I've only been saying that for 3 years. We can all see it happening in real time. And last but not least, we have got to talk about Honda. Big one from Honda this morning. And this is so far down the fold. And me and Mitch were talking about this morning. It's a great time to announce a story like this because nobody's going to notice. Everybody's worried about oil and private credit. Honda is taking a $15.7 billion with a B charge for electric vehicles. They're like the fifth automaker to take one of these multi-billion dollar charges. But this is huge, guys. Honda only has a $36 billion market cap, half the value of the company up in smoke in one line of accounting because of electric vehicles. You know, that other bubble that nobody saw coming? How many times did I warn everybody in 2022 and 2023 that electric vehicles was a bubble and all this money was going up in smoke? Ah, you know what? It's water under the bridge, right? A lot of water under the bridge. Guys, we got a lot to talk about today. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys so you can come back tomorrow. Have your coffee with the melon heads because we do this one every single day. Right now, the S&P 500 is lower for the morning, off by 45 points or 0.2% in the red. The Dow is off by 404 points, 0.85% lower. And the NASDAQ is off by 163 points, 0.65% in the red. So stocks look red across the board here. We've got the dollar is stronger again this morning, 99.45. That is 18 basis points higher. A lot of folks have been sitting back wondering, why is gold not ripping since the outbreak of war in the Middle East? Why is silver not really ripping? Although silver has had a good couple of days here. I think the strong dollar is playing a role here. I also think interest rates is playing a role here. We'll look at that in a minute. Also, margin calls possibly playing a role here. There's a couple of things that might explain why gold is taking its sweet time, but I don't think that's going to last. Looking over at the bond market this morning, the 30-year yield, 4.875. That is higher by almost 2 basis points. The 10-year yield, 4.233, up 2.5 points. We're going to look at that chart in just a minute here. The 2-year is at 3.657, higher by 2 points and change. And the 1 month is at 3.697, up by just a, or down by just a fraction of a point. So we got yields are higher this morning. Let's talk about yields a little bit because we've got this one. The U.S. Treasury completes buyback of $14.7 billion worth of debt. That is the largest Treasury buyback in history. All right, so what is a Treasury buyback? A Treasury buyback is when the U.S. government borrows money short-term by issuing Treasury bills, and then they use the proceeds of that to retire, to buy back and retire debt that is further out on the yield curve, like the 10-year, the 20-year, and the 30-year. Now, why would the government do that? Because mortgages, auto loans, credit card interest, all the important stuff is based on the long end of the yield curve, those 10, 20s, and 30s. And so the government is manipulating the issuance and the kind of debt they're issuing in order to basically suppress interest rates on the long end of the yield curve. And if that sounds like yield curve control, it's only because that's pretty much yield curve control, especially when you consider that the Federal Reserve is printing money to buy those Treasury bills that the government is issuing in order to buy back the long-dated stuff. So while this is going on, the biggest Treasury buyback in history, and by the way, this started under Biden and Yellen, and it has continued. Trump and Bessent have kept doing it, and in a lot of ways, they have made things worse. But let's take a look here at what's going on with the 10-year yield. Even though they've been doing all this, we're sitting at 4.24% on the 10-year, and these are daily candles. When the conflict in the Middle East started, we were at about 3.95. So we've got 28, 29 basis points of total move higher in the 10-year yield since this conflict started. That has pushed interest rates higher. That's possibly, along with the stronger dollar, a reason why gold is not doing well here. And the reason why I mention this, let's go all the way back over here. This is your post-Liberation Day panic. All right, everybody remember Taco Day on April 9th when President Trump finally announced that he was backing off on all the tariffs and everything after going to like 140% tariffs on China? It was this sudden vertical move in the 10-year yield, all this worries in the bond market that ultimately forced Trump to capitulate on the tariff thing. So we haven't seen anything quite like that, right? This move is rather sudden, 25 to 30 basis points, but it's not nearly as sudden as the tariff panic was. And if you're wondering, like, what's going to be a sign that the war is almost over or what might cause President Trump to capitulate or might start the bombing, honestly, I think more so than the price of oil, what you need to watch is the 10-year yield. If you see a sudden dramatic move higher in this thing, that means something policy-wise is about to change. At the end of the day, everybody in the world answers to the bond market one way or another, whether they realize it or not. Also going on this morning, Bitcoin back at 70,259, kind of unchanged from where we were yesterday, up by about 60 bucks here. Still in this range where we've been for the better part of the last month. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got gold is marginally higher here, 51.76 for spot gold. April COMEX gold futures are at 51.81. That's higher by about $2. Gold's going nowhere this morning. Spot silver, slow and steady to the upside. That's what I like to see. 86.88 for spot silver. That's higher by $1.14 or 1.3% higher. May silver futures are at $87.10, higher by about $1.55 or 1.8%. I like the shiny. Copper is down about 0.33%. Platinum is lower by 0.9%. Palladium's up 1.1%. And crude oil is ripping again this morning, 8% higher for WTI crude at $93, almost $94 a barrel. Brent right behind it, up almost 8% at $99 and change. We've got natural gas is a little bit higher here this morning. Heating oil's a lot bit higher. And gasoline futures up another 4.4% here. So let's look at the oil chart. That's a pretty big candle here. Again, you've got that just absolutely wacky candle that we had on Monday. Let's disregard that. You can see the chart is still steady up and to the right. Outside of Friday and Monday, this is the biggest move we've seen so far this morning, $94 and continuing. And that's despite the SPR release. So let's talk about the SPR release here. U.S. to release 172 million barrels of oil for IEA relief plan. The Trump administration plans to release 172 million barrels from the U.S. emergency oil reserves as part of the coordinated effort by nations around the world to ease surging crude and fuel prices. That's less than 2 weeks since the beginning of the Iran war. The release announced by Energy Secretary Chris Wright in a statement Wednesday evening will take about 120 days to fully deliver the oil from the Energy Department's Strategic Petroleum Reserve. So they're going to be doing a little bit over a million barrels a day. They're going to be dumping here about 1.5 million barrels a day. It's part of the plan by member nations of the International Energy Agency to discharge a total of 400 million barrels from the reserves globally. This is to tide the world over. Okay, yeah, talking point. The Strategic Petroleum Reserve currently contains roughly 415 million barrels, about 60% of its capacity, following a series of withdrawals by the Biden administration. Those included a record sale of 180 million barrels to help lower gasoline prices after Russia's invasion of Ukraine began in 2022. That's a decision President Trump and other Republicans assailed. Boy, it'd be nice to have that oil right about now, wouldn't it? And gee, maybe it would have been a good idea to refill the Strategic Petroleum Reserve when oil was $60 a barrel. Or maybe it was even a better idea to buy oil when prices were freaking negative $20 a barrel during COVID. Maybe it would have been a good idea to buy a bunch of oil for the SPR then. But look, this is like the government spending problem now. The Strategic Petroleum Reserve, it's going to go away. We're gonna dump it until there's nothing left because we're just awful and we have no discipline. That's why this oil is going to be exhausted. No president will ever come into office and say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to spend a bunch of money on oil instead of my social agenda, and I'm going to drive up the price of gasoline heading into the midterms in order to do what's right and responsible for the country to refill the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. No politician will ever do this. Because take your medicine is horrible politics. And we're just so terrible that this is just, the SPR is just going to go away. It's sad, but that seems to be the thing. And when that happens, you can expect more fuel volatility. Meanwhile, we had three more ships were struck in the Persian Gulf as Iran warns of oil prices hitting $200 a barrel. If this conflict drags on for months, that $200 number might be light there. But three more foreign ships were struck in the Persian Gulf overnight, authorities said, as attacks intensify on vessels sailing through or near the strategically vital Strait of Hormuz. I don't know if the attacks are intensifying or if they're just carrying on at the same pace, because yesterday three ships were hit too. We had a container ship was struck by an unknown projectile about 35 nautical miles north of Jebel Ali. I believe that was a drone boat. This was a major port city in Dubai where it got hit. The incident caused a small fire on board. All crew were reported safe. Earlier, two foreign tankers where it left ablaze in Iraqi waters after having been struck near the port of Umm Qasr near the city of Basra. Now, at least one person was killed in that attack, according to multiple media reports citing Iraqi port officials, and 38 crew members were rescued from the ships. Iraq's general company for ports was not immediately available for contact. So three more boats were hit. Those two boats that were hit in Iraq, they were tied up side by side. It looks like one of the boats was hit. Big fire started, spread to the boat next door. And even as this is going on, China has tightened their fuel export curbs as Iran war hits oil supply. We talked about this one a few days ago, that China was suggesting that people stop exporting their oil. Well, they're not asking anymore. Chinese oil refiners have begun canceling agreed refined fuel export cargoes, including gasoline and diesel, according to people familiar with the matter, as Beijing further tightens curbs to cope with the impact of war in the Middle East. The country's largest processors were told last week to stop signing new export contracts and to negotiate the cancellation of cargoes that had already been agreed. The latest directive is a step up from the earlier guidance, which had been understood as non-mandatory and as allowing some March loading shipments to proceed. The refiners have now been instructed to suspend all exports of so-called clean oil products that have yet to complete customs procedures, the people said. Shipments that have not yet cleared customs as of Wednesday are no longer permitted to leave. So they're not asking. Now they're telling no fuel exports from China. And we talked about price controls in India yesterday for fuel. Today, South Korea to cap fuel price starting on Friday to ease consumer burden. The 70s are so back, baby. South Korea said on Thursday that it will cap domestic fuel prices starting on Friday to combat a spike in energy costs stemming from the conflict in the Middle East. Let's see what we have. South Korea relies almost totally on imports for its energy, buying about 70% of its oil and 20% of its LNG from the Middle East, according to the Korean International Trade Association. South Korea will also restrict the stockpiling of petroleum products, requiring refiners to release at least 90% of the monthly volume of petroleum products they released in March and April a year earlier, according to the finance ministries. And what do price controls lead to every time? If you said shortages, congratulations, you've been paying attention. All right, so now the big one of the day. We got through all the oil stories. Let's talk about private credit. The chorus of disapproval for private credit gets louder as Morgan Stanley Fund is the latest to cap withdrawals. Is it a chorus or is it a mob of screaming, shrieking people demanding their money back? I'm not sure there's much harmony going on. I don't think they're in tune. I think they're just screaming for their money back and they're not getting it. Another day, another private credit fund capping withdrawals and another well-known commentator expressing concern about the sector. Morgan Stanley's $8 billion North Haven Private Income Fund became the latest vehicle that did not meet the redemption demand of its investors, saying in a Securities and Exchange Commission filing that it's capping withdrawals at the pre-existing 5% limit of shares, far below the 10.9% requested. This followed hot on the heels of a similar crisis at Cliffwater's private credit fund that became apparent in the past few days. And after a string of highly publicized problems experienced by the likes of Blue Owl, who permanently gated withdrawals, and also Blackstone and BlackRock, and in meeting their investors' liquidity needs. So look, you've got five big ones now. Blackstone and BlackRock, they came back to back just after Blue Owl. Yesterday, it was Cliffwater. By the way, Cliffwater, remember we were talking in the opening monologue yesterday about how they said the redemption requests were in excess of 7%? And I remember saying that could mean anything. It could be 7.01% or it could be 99%. It was 14% of investors asked for their money back, or investors representing 14% of the total fund asked for their money back. And Cliffwater was debating whether they were going to redeem 5% or 7%. Well, when it's 14%, it doesn't really matter. Now we've got almost 11% from this Morgan Stanley fund. They want their money back. Only half of them are going to get it, or less than half of them. And again, guys, this is, you could say it's a feature, not a bug of private credit. I mean, all these funds that are doing this to people are out there in the press trying to reassure everybody that this is normal, that we knew about this, that we planned for this. No, this is not normal. It's not normal to have people outside your office banging on the door saying they want their money back and you just closing the shade and saying, sorry, 5% only. That's not normal. These headlines day in and day out. I mean, and at this point, it's feeding on itself. It's getting worse. Every headline lays the groundwork for the next one because, oh, now Morgan Stanley, gee, I've got my money in that other fund run by Dewey, Cheatham and Howe. Maybe I should get my money out of that firm too. And so the stampede continues. This is a shadow bank run. Right? We call private credit non-depository financial institutions or non-banks or shadow banks. This is a shadow bank run. And the shadow banks do not have a liquidity problem. They have a collateral problem. But the actual banks are the ones giving them the money, so that's good. Deutsche Bank flags a $30 billion exposure to private credit. But don't worry, it gets better. Deutsche Bank flagged 26 billion euros or $30 billion of exposure to private credit, an asset class that's grappling with fund redemption, scrutiny, and underwriting standards. No, they don't have underwriting standards. They're not grappling with them. They just don't have them. An impact of AI on borrowers such as software makers. In its annual report published Thursday, the lender said it is not exposed to significant risks after just telling us they had $30 billion of risks related to non-bank financial institutions, but that it could face potential indirect credit risks through interconnected portfolios and counterparties. Failures of a select number of subprime lenders in the U.S. increased investor focus on risks associated with private credit and raised wider concern around underwriting standards and fraud risk, it said in the report. When they said subprime lenders in the U.S., they're talking about Tricolor, First Brands, Carrioxx Capital. And by the way, it's not just in the U.S. You also had Market Financial Solutions just in the last couple of days. That was a U.K. private lender. They went under because of fraud. This fraud is rampant in this sector. Now, people familiar with the matter said last month that the German firm is part of a group of lenders who have been unable to sell about $1.2 billion of loans backing the acquisition of a software provider in a rare hung deal. Now, a hung deal is when a bank underwrites a loan for a merger, and then their plan is to sell that loan to somebody else, and then they get stuck. They can't find a buyer for that loan, and so the hung deal means stuck holding that bag. And this is the best part here. I mean, if you're worried about their private credit exposure, don't worry. While Deutsche Bank is warning of the risks in private credit, it plans to expand its own private credit offerings. The bank said it intends to widen distribution through selective regional expansion and the joint development of innovative products and digital investment solutions with its private bank. Oh, great. Don't worry, guys. We've got $30 billion of exposure, but the good news is it's going to get bigger. You just got to love these banks. But wait, there's more. Insurance companies, they're doing it too. Japan insurers are still keen on private debt amid growing red flags. Red flags are a good sign, right? Isn't that how that works? Japan's largest life insurers are continuing plans to increase private credit investment in the final year or in the fiscal year beginning in April amid recent warning signals about the health of the sector. That's according to a survey by Bloomberg. Nippon Life Insurance, Meiji Yasuda Life Insurance, and Daiichi Life Insurance said they will maintain their current investment plans for the private lending sector. The survey conducted this month showed Sumitomo Life Insurance said its views on private credit investment haven't changed, but declined to comment on its investment policy. Life insurance companies have joined global investors in a private debt market binge in search of higher yields, but the sector has been hit by a recent wave of capital outflows and losses, tainting the allure of the asset class. The MFS case is largely, okay, they're talking about Market Financial Solutions here. In February, Barclays and Atlas Partners were among financial companies exposed to the collapse of Market Financial Solutions in the UK. Earlier this month, BlackRock curbed withdrawals from one of its private credit funds after client requests for redemptions spiked. They're not mentioning Blackstone, Cliffwater, Morgan Stanley, or Blue Owl here, but yeah, a lot of redemptions going on, a lot of gating. The Market Financial Solutions case is largely attributable to fraud at an individual company. Oh, say it. Say the line. Say it's an isolated event. Come on. Say the line. At present, the possibility of systemic risk spreading to the entire market is limited, said Nippon Life in his survey response. This has once again highlighted the importance of due diligence in the market, which is outside the framework of traditional banking regulations. The three other insurers also categorized MFS as an isolated incident. There it is. We got it. They said the line. It's an isolated event. Yes. Thank you. Cut the applause. Please hold to the end. It was an isolated incident in a survey and said they believe the impact on the market as a whole will be limited. Careful risk management was the key to the successful investments in private credit, the insurance said. Yes, careful risk management, or having any risk management at all, might be a good place to start. And then we'll work our way up to careful. There's a lot of diligence that is due. All right, let's talk about Oracle earnings. And I apologize for missing this one yesterday, guys. But we're a day late to this story. But Oracle soars on strong AI cloud sales and fiscal year outlook. Oracle shares soared as much as 15% on Wednesday after the software and cloud services company reported strong sales and issued an outlook that suggests little let up in demand for AI compute. Revenue in Oracle's closely watched infrastructure business jumped 84% to $4.9 billion in the 3 months ended February 28th, the company said on Tuesday. That surpasses the 79% that analysts had expected and up from 68% in the previous quarter. Total revenue will reach $90 billion in the fiscal year beginning in June, Oracle said. But honestly, I really don't think it's the revenue. I think it's their spending plans that sent the stock higher yesterday. The company's big spending has also attracted attention of investors who've grown increasingly concerned about an AI bubble. Even including Wednesday's gains, its stock is still down almost 50% from a September peak on concerns about the costs associated with a big buildout. The company's cash flow is expected to be negative for the next few years, and it's slashing expenses where it can. In other words, they're laying people off. On Tuesday, it announced that some cloud customers are going to pay for their own chips. Oracle's capital expenditures were about $18.6 billion in the fiscal third quarter. Now, that's higher than the $14 billion that was expected by analysts, but the company maintained its outlook for $50 billion in capital costs in the current fiscal year, which could address concerns about overspending that have plagued Oracle and other cloud infrastructure providers. That's according to Anurag Rana, an analyst at Bloomberg. And it's that outlook for $50 billion in capital in CapEx. They did not increase their CapEx, and I think that is why Oracle was rewarded yesterday with a 9% stock bump. Let's look at a five-day chart here. Okay, there's the jump we saw yesterday of 9%. We're up another 1.8, almost 2% now. But let's put that in context. Over the last year, it's up only 13%, but down more than 50% from the obscene highs of over $300 that this was trading at in September. So Oracle being rewarded for not doing what the other big tech companies are doing. Now, let's talk about big tech. NVIDIA invests $2 billion in AI cloud company Nebius. CoreWeave stock isn't the only neo cloud play. Yes, CoreWeave stock is not the only member of this CJ financing agreement. Yep. Yeah, grabbing the joystick to your right, but don't forget the joystick to your left. Am I right, Jensen? NVIDIA stock rose by double digits on Wednesday. The cloud computing company is set to get an investment from chipmaker NVIDIA, which continues to backstop the artificial intelligence boom. And isn't backstop supposed to be a negative connotation? When you need to backstop something, isn't that because you're worried that the catcher missed it and it's going to roll off into the parking lot and across the street while runners are rounding the bases behind you? Is it like backstops? The point of backstops is to not need them, to not, right? NVIDIA will invest $2 billion in Nebius to enable the company to deploy more than 5 gigawatts of computing capacity by 2030, the company said on Wednesday. In other words, NVIDIA is going to give Nebius $2 billion. Nebius is going to give it right back to them, and NVIDIA is going to report it as revenue. They're just buying their own chips using a middleman. They do this with CoreWeave. They do this with Lambda Labs. They do this with everybody. Now you can add Nebius to it. NVIDIA's investments in companies that purchase or rent its hardware have raised eyebrows among AI skeptics, you think? However, Barron's has argued that it could turn out to be a smart use of its surplus cash, meaning it's not overly reliant on a few big chip customers and locking in demand for future generations of its AI processors. Yeah, maybe Barron's has argued that, but Barron's is wrong. It's the biggest financial fraud in history, the AI bubble. And by the way, keep an eye on this private credit blow up, because a lot of the money that is paying for these data center buildouts that isn't coming directly from NVIDIA anyway is coming from private credit. NVIDIA stock down 0.8%, trading at $184, pretty much where it's been for the last, what, 8 months, 9 months now? How long has it been? Three quarters. We've been sitting, bouncing between 170 and the low 190s, just going a whole bunch of nowhere. Full disclosure, I am short NVIDIA. And the last one of the day, guys, this is a big one here. Honda warns of $15.7 billion charge on global EV downturn. Man, EVs have just incinerated cash like you wouldn't believe. And guys, get a good look at what the numbers in here and what these car companies have done. All of the big tech companies are going to do this with data centers within the next few years. And the charges are going to be a whole hell of a lot bigger than $15 billion when this comes for the data centers, much like I said, this would come for the automakers. Honda faces up to 2.5 trillion yen or $15.7 billion in charges and a historic annual loss as it joins a growing list of global brands battered by the rapid unraveling of the electric vehicle transition. The carmaker's strategy rethink will see it cancel the development and launch of three EV models that it had planned to bring for North America, it said on Thursday. Honda had forecast between 270 billion yen and 570 billion yen in operating losses for the fiscal year ending March. Meanwhile, its net loss could be as much as 690 billion yen, the first since Honda began disclosing consolidated results in 1977. It previously predicted a profit. All right, so they are predicting an annual loss, the first ever, and it's going to be massive. The situation changed far more rapidly than we expected. CEO, let's try this. Toshihiro Mibe told reporters, how's my pronunciation? The suspension of EV subsidies in North America undercut growth, and competition in China meant we couldn't provide attractive models or maintain our competitive edge. Just last month, Honda warned of surging expenses related to its EV business, but the shock announcement lays bare how fast electric ambitions are crumbling. After piling into the sector as clean energy initiatives fueled a bullish outlook, along with Cathie Wood and her glasses, carmakers are now scaling back their big EV bets as they struggle with volatile demand and intense competition from Chinese manufacturers. Honda's charges would put it alongside Stellantis, which is taking a more than $25 billion hit in charges, mainly linked to reversing course on its EV strategy. Ford's $19.5 billion hit from the overhaul. And of course, Honda's 2.5 trillion yen hit will be split almost evenly across the fiscal year and the next. All right, so let's look at Honda stock. It's down 5.8%. Let's refresh this. Yeah, down 5.8% this morning. Now, one thing I would point out, the market cap of Honda is $34 billion. And they're talking about taking a 15.7, almost a $16 billion hit, almost half the value of this company they lost in their bet on electric vehicles, along with all the other major car makers, because they tried to jam this down people's throats before they were ready for it. I hope we continue to develop EVs in certain markets and for certain people's circumstances. EVs make a lot of sense, but all of these ridiculous 2030 EV mandates and bans on internal combustion engines, they were stupid ideas to begin with. They're not going to last. And all these investments in electric vehicle are turning into one-time charges and impairment costs on quarterlies. Oh, I can't wait until this shows up for the data centers. It's going to be magnificent. And by magnificent, I mean like just utterly dreadful and awful. But hey, remember, nobody saw it coming. And I just want to say thank you very much to Innovative Sustainable Solutions. Look at this, the strategic midterm reserve. I see what you did there with the oil thing. That's right. You know, when Biden dumped 180 million barrels of oil, it was heading right into the midterms where he was expected to take a trouncing. And it's funny, here we are now. Trump is dumping the strategic petroleum reserve, a nearly identical amount, 172 versus 180, heading into the midterms. That's interesting, the strategic midterm reserve. I like what you're saying there, Innovative Sustainable Solutions. Thank you, sir, for being a Melonhead member for 4 months. KDM28 says, does SPR release really lower gas price, LOL? Not one for one. The SPR doesn't directly lower gasoline prices. It does put downward pressure. I mean, it lowers oil prices for sure, right? And it will have an immediate impact on the futures market, or at least it will slow the increases in the futures market. But remember, you've got refinery bottlenecks. Oil isn't just used for gasoline. It's used for fertilizer. It's used for chemical production, plastic production as well. So yes, it lowers gas prices, but it's indirect. Thank you, KDM28, for supporting the channel, for being a Melonhead member for 18 months. Mr. 4Ps says, if I were POTUS, thank God I'm not, if I were POTUS, how would you extend all of this? And at what point would you concede? This all seems to be fake and at a point people just don't care or have given up. Jack for POTUS or assistant principal. Jesus, I don't want either job. How would I extend all of this? Well, let me just tell you this. Right now, one of the worst things we ever did was when we took a shot at Osama bin Laden in the 1990s after the bombing of the Kohl. We fired a bunch of tomahawks at him, and we missed. And we made him a legend in the eyes of his people, and we made him even more powerful, and that ended up growing his global support, and 9/11 happened. So I don't have all the answers here, but I can tell you this. If we just stop and walk away, we will have strengthened the Ayatollah's regime because they will have stood up to the great snake and survived. So I don't think that is like one of the worst things we could do, as awful as it is, and not to belittle people dying. But if you stop now before achieving any of your goals, you have only made them stronger, and you have only guaranteed more of this bullshit is going to continue for the next 50 years. So I don't really have a good answer for you. I can tell you I sure as shit would not use American Navy ships to escort oil tankers bound for China. I would definitely not do that. Our Navy is good. They're very good at protecting themselves and their carriers. But sailing within 20 miles of a hostile nation's coast, a nation that has been stockpiling missiles for the last 20 years, our Navy's good. It's not that good. That's putting American servicemen's lives at risk for Chinese oil. No, thank you. So I would not do that either. Hey, we were seizing boats. We told Venezuela no tankers in or out. We started grabbing all their boats. So why are we allowing tankers bound for China out of the strait while the Iranians say tankers going nowhere else are allowed? And I don't even know that that's accurate. I think the Chinese boats are getting hit too. I heard about a tanker that had Hong Kong written on the back, like it was flagged out of Hong Kong, that got hit. So I think the Iranians are just shooting at everything, to be honest with you. I don't know, guys. Just be glad I'm not president. Let's put it that way. The tabloids would be hilarious if I was. Thank you, 4Ps, for supporting the channel. Uncle Fedster gifted 5 memberships. Thank you so much, Uncle Fedster, for supporting the channel. Welcome to the Melon Heads, you 5 baby melons. Be sure and say thank you to Uncle Fedster. And you also have to say thank you to Nacho Man, who gifted 20 memberships. Thank you, Nacho Man, and thank you, Uncle Fedster, for swelling the ranks in the Melon Patch. Just a reminder, guys, you get a free super chat with that membership. Use that. I will read and respond to your questions, thoughts, comments, and concerns live on the air. Thanks again, Nacho. And Big Mouth Barry says, how did your seminar go yesterday? It went very well yesterday. Thank you, sir. Had a good time. Learned a lot from a lot of people. Had a really good lineup on there. Some of the guys I had never heard of before, but was very impressed by them. A lot of talk about energy, a lot of talk about metals, and then some things that came out of nowhere, to be honest with you. Some investment ideas I never in a million years would have thought of, but I will be going and pondering those things, doing my own DD based on what I heard yesterday. So thank you very much, George Noble, for the opportunity to present yesterday. I appreciate that. And thank you to everybody who attended as well. Let me know, by the way, if you did attend, send me an email. Let me know how you think I did. Just curious. Open to your feedback. Thank you, Big Mouth Barry, for supporting the channel for 4 months. Josiah DeWitt, did I say that right? Thank you. Thank you, Josiah. He says, shadow thanks. I like it. This is non-depository financial gratitude is what this is. The shadow thanks from the shadow banks. I appreciate the laugh, and thank you very much for the generosity, Josiah. Appreciate that very much. Mr. EJ Walsh 877 says, U.S. SPR release, price drop, and China adds to its SPR. You know, that's what they did the last time. We talked about this one briefly yesterday. When we dumped that 180 million barrels to drive down the price of oil in 2022, which worked, by the way, it did lower the price of oil, but China took advantage of that oil price that we gave them at the expense of our energy security, and they increased their own holdings. They bought up that oil that we were selling, bidding the price back up higher. So are they going to do the same thing again? Well, they just banned the export curbs, didn't they? So they probably will start stockpiling energy again. And look, if you're China and you really do plan on rolling on Taiwan and Venezuela is no longer on the menu, and there's a chance Iran may not be on the menu, and you're worried about the Malacca Strait getting blockaded by the U.S. Navy when you invade Taiwan, why wouldn't you take advantage of this and fill your own energy reserves? You would have to. It would be suicidal not to for your economy. So I would not at all be surprised to learn that China is going to be increasing their reserves while the rest of the world dumps. Thank you, EJ Walsh, for supporting the channel. And thank you also to the feral grandma, not the federal grandma. Please don't take that personally, a slip of the tongue. Thank you, feral grandma, for supporting the channel with 10 new memberships. Welcome to the Melon Patch. 10 more baby melons to go along with the others from before. I appreciate that very much. Everybody, be sure and say thank you if you got one of those memberships. Remember to use those super chats if you want your questions answered on the air. Thanks again, Feral Grandma, and thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with us, Melon Heads, this morning. Don't forget the like button on the way out. Hit that subscribe button if you're new here. I'll see you tomorrow. Thank you very much for all the super chats, as well as you magnanimous Melon Heads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Links are down below, should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Till next time, live small and dream big.